Hello, good evening. This is Maria Callas from her own home in Milano. Milan of Italy.
Color archive footage of Maria walking down the steps of an aircraft, carrying a suitcase and handbag, and wearing a grey hat with a large brim which covers the top of her head. She smiles broadly. Now, in the modern day, a black woman climbs out of a cab. Later, she's in a darkened studio where she puts on a pair of headphones. Another white-haired man in a blazer and a white woman in glasses are also standing with headphones on. Archive footage of Maria walking off a plane.
You see, voice is the best way of serving music. The voice is the greatest means of expressing beautiful feelings.
She had, by universal agreement, one of the most remarkable operatic voices of modern times. She was Maria Callas, once seen, never forgotten.
There was something just so magical about her. She has such a unique voice. She was untouchable.
This is very beautiful. When I was younger, I used to play it all the time, and it just completely struck my heart.
Maria Callas' voice was the first voice in opera I ever heard. She's got piercing drama.
One of the most unforgettable moments in my life, really. I was 19 years old. I thought, wow, this beautiful, dark voice. This was bottled power.
It is true that wherever Madame Callas makes her electric appearance, nearly everyone talks of the opera and of Madame Callas.
She was a vocal genius who came from nowhere, who made herself into the most famous classical singer in the world. People would camp out just to get a glimpse of her singing.
Maria Callas, she's the greatest. Only for her would I do this, nobody else.
The myth about Maria Callas was that she fell in love with the wrong man, gave up her career, everything, so that she could follow this man, Aristotle Onassis.
The name of opera singer Maria Callas was linked with Onassis for many years, and most people expected that they would marry. But to everyone's surprise, he married Jackie Kennedy.
Famous, successful opera singer, seduced by Aristotle Onassis. Onassis dumps her and marries Jackie Kennedy. She dies of grief.
Almost every account of Callas tells some version of that story. But her real problem was something completely different, and it cost her a lot of effort to hide it for as long as she could.
There is no question, Callas's life is a tragedy. It is a deeply troubling and moving tragedy, but the standard telling of it misses the causes almost completely.
Maria Callas, the final act. A calendar cycles through the years, stopping at 1958. Daisy Goodwin, author of Diva.
One of the things I love that Maria always says is, you know, I'm as difficult as I need to be to achieve perfection. And that's what Maria was about. She was about achieving perfection musically, and she was incredibly professional.
She comes to the Rome Opera. She has triumphed there in two different seasons, 1950 and 1953, as Norma, her greatest role. So she's going to come back and sing it one more time in 1958.
Will Crutchfield.
A glittering audience had gathered. A fashion parade straight out of Who's Who. 3,000 people, from artists to aristocrats, from dancers to diplomats. As brilliant a first night audience as the Eternal City has ever seen. To crown the occasion, the President of the Italian Republic himself. All here to listen to Maria Menghini Callas, soprano.
She woke up having had, I think, 12 hours sleep, thought she could do it. And then as the afternoon came, she felt she could produce barely anything except for a squeak. She begged the director to have an understudy ready. He said, well, no one can understudy Callas. So she went on stage for the first act. She sang the celebrated Casta Diva.
Her voice just goes.
She declares herself unable to continue.
She couldn't go on.
And so she just walks off stage.
They have to send the gala audience home in confusion and scandal with the President of the Republic in the audience.
And there is pandemonium.
The opera singer who didn't. Maria Callas, the tigress who walked out after the first act of the opera Norma. Then she announced that she couldn't sing. Lost her voice, she said. Denials, threats, and later rumours of summonses.
Complete scandal.
Will Crutchfield is a conductor, musicologist, and vocal coach. Now, a series of headlines in Italian newspapers about Maria.
There's a riot outside the opera house. She has to be taken to her hotel in an underground tunnel.
Black and white archive footage of Maria appearing on a video link on a TV talk show.
Just what did happen in Rome, Madame Callas?
I just happened to catch a stupid cold that chose a very bad evening, and I just couldn't make it. That was all there was to it.
She had begun to become an unreliable professional, which had is the opposite of the way she made her name. And here the chronology is interesting because in this period of 1957-58, she had begun to withdraw on short notice from projects, to cancel performances. She has disputes with theaters. It was a very puzzling period for everyone around her.
It was on the evening of November 6, 1958, that Metropolitan Opera manager Rudolph Bing fired the mercurial soprano, Callas.
I hate the word fire in connection with such a distinguished artist as Maria Callas. I prefer to say that our ways parted.
You think there's any chance that you'll sing at the Metropolitan again?
I wish I could tell you, gentlemen. Right now, I'm just trying to catch my plane.
And we also have a reputation as one of the most tempestuous opera stars in the world. Well, I don't know what you mean by tempestuous.
Rumors are flying around that Miss Madame Callas is supposed to hit the gentleman on the head with a bottle of brandy.
Unfortunately, I wish
you
I
never
did.
Yeah,
Let me give you a year, 1958. In that year, you walked out in Rome. You abide from La Scala that year. Then came Bing, a fight. And you say, where is all the drama? 1958 alone had enough drama for a lifetime.
A headline, the voice is callous, but notes sour.
After the scandal of Rome, the knives were out for Callas.
Sophia Lambden, author of the Callas imprint.
She was feeling more and more insecure. She would later actually recall, I almost had a nervous breakdown at the time.
I was on the verge of it about 2 or 3 months ago when I gave up San Francisco. I was run down, I was tired.
All singers have times that their voice is just not with them and they have to cancel. That is not strange. What is strange is if the cancellations start to dominate the career. The real reason is that she was in trouble. She was in agony because her voice was no longer working.
Her voice is a superpower, and suddenly it's beginning to kind of dissolve.
Her voice had betrayed her. That was her entire identity.
Her high notes were just falling apart. The word we use for it is wobble.
Critics started to pick up on the fact that sometimes when she sang very high notes, especially if they were lengthy, they would hear a wobble, which would sound like two notes wavering. So it would sound like two notes oscillating.
This is Callas in 1958. She seems in pain in some of the high notes. So that's the climax of the piece, and it's just bad. It's the highest note is out of tune. It sort of drifts up as she tries to hold it. There's obvious strain on the voice, and worst of all, it has this slow waver that just sort of deprives us of the pleasure of hearing the blossoming voice at the climax. Her voice is clearly in peril. I think she made every effort to disguise it, but she knew.
So why is her voice in trouble? What's the problem here?
That takes some forensic examination.
On a flip-up calendar, 1923, then a black-and-white photo of Maria as a young girl and a reel-to-reel tape machine playing a recording.
Maria Meneghini Callas, born in New York City. Her name, Maria Anna Sophia Cecilia, and I've never been able to pronounce the last name. Would you do it for me?
In Greek.
In Greek.
Ready?
Yes.
Kalogeropoulou.
Her mother had come over from Greece while she was pregnant. Her father had emigrated from Greece to New York a few years before, and he'd set up a pharmacy. The mother had had a son who died. And so when she gives birth to this dark-haired girl, she's very disappointed. And according to legend, i.e. Maria, she said, take her away, I'm not interested. Who knows if that's true? She had one older sister called Jackie, who was blonde, petite, and beautiful. And Maria was basically the ugly duckling, the Cinderella in the corner.
I suppose I was a solitary girl also, shall we say, and I loved music, mainly.
She was said to have fallen in love with music and even with singing pretty much, as she herself said, in the cradle. When she was 11, she would prance around singing the Habanera from Carmen. She would wear out the grooves of these records.
My mother always thought, and probably they had good reason, my father and my mother, I don't know. They always said I used to sing. I always used to sing for pleasure. I never even dreamed of having to have a career as a singer. I don't think I would have chosen that even.
Tommaso Pajani, curator of My Private Callas. He puts down an archive box on a table.
Those are the Maria Callas personal photograph album. They are from her personal album that she kept at her house in Paris until her death.
Instant candid photos of Maria.
A lot of these materials are never seen before. So here you can see it for the first time.
A photo of Maria hiding her face behind a shawl. Now an album of images.
And for example, in this album, we can see the photograph of her mother.
Mm-hmm.
parents can be very ambitious, not my father, my mother. And she came from a very good family, so she probably would have wanted me to be what she would have wanted to be. I don't know what she would have wanted to be.
The mother is the classic stage mother. She desperately wants to be famous. She wants to be acknowledged by her relations in Greece. She wants to be somebody. She wanted to reap the benefits of Maria's voice, but she also wanted to control her. So she takes Maria and Jackie back to Athens. They have no money. The husband is left behind. She doesn't care about the husband.
And you knew poverty, famine, and cold, and bombs in Greece in World War II.
Poverty in Greece, yes. And it wasn't anybody's fault but the war.
Archive footage of crumbling buildings, reels of barbed wire and debris on the ground.
Those were very, very difficult times. It is true that her mother suggested that Jackie and Maria go out with Italian soldiers with the aim of acquiring food or money. However, she went out with an Italian soldier and then she explained what was going on. She burst into tears and he took pity on her and gave her food anyway. And she didn't have to do anything in exchange for that food. She did at some point realize this wasn't how mothers typically treated their daughters. But Callas enlisted at the National Conservatoire. You couldn't enlist at the age of 13, so she pretended she was 17.
There, she comes into contact with a very important singer from the earlier part of the century, Elvira de Hidalgo.
So as a young girl, which means 13 years old, I was immediately thrown into her arms.
Come, Elev.
1969, what was she like as a student? Elvira de Hidalgo replies, perfect, obedient, intelligent, a really hard worker. Such a hard worker, that was incredible.
So I used to go to the conservatoire, 10 o'clock in the morning, and I used to leave with the last pupil. Even Hidalgo was quite amazed because she was asking me frequently, why do you stay here? My answer was that even from the least talented pupil, he can teach you something that you, mostly talented, might not be able to do.
De Hidalgo taught Callas the disciplines of bel canto singing. Meaning music that moves fast. Music where you've got to get from one note to another accurately at high velocity.
Bel canto is not beautiful singing. It is a way of music. The method is usually always on the scales, trills, all the bel canto embellishments.
The voice flows. The vowels are pure and they're perfectly, consistently going along all the time without any disruptions. And then the consonants are like little pebbles that go along.
You could sing all the operas of Wagner without being able to do that stuff.
Wagner is much easier to sing, frankly.
In a way, yes, of course.
In every way.
This is pretty much celestial singing.
An instrument, which is the vocal instrument, it is a sort of a drug to you. If you manage to transmit this to the public, well, then this is really the greatest powers that one can have.
after 6 months of training with the Hidalgo, I was immediately taken by the opera in Greece. Then I went to Italy and I started my really great career.
The big career starts in 1947, when she makes her debut in Verona.
She gets a job singing in the amphitheatre there, and she meets a kind of, I don't know how to describe him, a sort of an older man who likes opera singers called Meneghini, and he proposes to her.
Now, the thing is, Meneghini did not like opera. When Callas's performances would be broadcast over the radio, she would actually write to him, "Try to listen to one if you can."
He keeps her in fur coats and all the rest of it, pays all her bills. They get married. He has a brick factory.
And he thought, well, I could market her like I could a load of bricks.
Conductor Will Crutchfield.
For the next 3 years, she's making debuts in every important opera house as fast as they can get her. Callas sang better and more movingly and more expertly than anyone else we know in her repertory.
A photo of Maria smiling, wearing a pearl necklace and long earrings.
She sang high and low, slow and fast, extremes of violence and delicacy in expression. And this was admired by all.
A packed auditorium, then director Franco Zeffirelli speaking in 1979.
This theatre, this stage, still really seems to reverberate with her voice and the memory. I am Franco Zeffirelli, and together with Leonard Bernstein, Luchino Visconti, Carlo Maria Giulini, among others, I had the privilege to be part of that extraordinary period when Maria Callas reigned supreme here in La Scala.
Stagehands preparing a theatre.
She made La Scala her home theatre, and that was the most important theatre in Italy. Here is the best soprano history has shown us, and she is going to define it for all of us for the foreseeable future.
You really become the main instrument of the orchestra, which is probably... not probably, it is exactly the meaning of prima donna.
It wasn't just her voice. Her voice obviously is, you know, the thing, but also she was this astonishing actress.
Callas's whole mission was to present opera as, yes, a work of beauty, but also realistically so that you could listen and identify with the characters. They weren't just these crazy figures in this somewhat nonsensical world where everybody is singing to express their feelings.
Because you can't persuade the public of a preposterous thing. Of course, what is the main thing that musicians should do is give it the most credibility possible, and to persuade the public of its reality, and to take them over.
She just really wished that you heard the character's love, that character's woe, that character's pain, the character's tears. She just really wished you to connect with that.
She had this incredible gift. And when she walked on the stage,
you knew something was happening. And I saw many, many performances. I mean, she kept you spellbound.
1953 on a flip-up calendar.
You were, at one stage of your career, a very heavy woman, I understand.
Yes. My first instinct was saying that the face is too fat and I can't stand it because I needed the chin for expression. And then I was tired of playing a beautiful young woman and I was a heavy, uncomfortable woman to move around.
So she went from weighing around 14 and a half stone to weighing 8 stone in the space of less than 2 years. It is a huge amount to lose for anybody in that spell of time.
According to Zeffirelli, of course I did very well, he told me that she had had a tapeworm inserted. I don't know, of course, if this is true or not, but this is what he told me.
Before, I was not feeling well. It was something had gone wrong with me, and I couldn't explain it, doctors couldn't explain it, and I was just not feeling well at all. All of a sudden, I found the cause. Can't say it. It's not very pleasant. I cured the cause, not by medicine. I never did take any medicine, except maybe if I have a headache, as all women do sometimes. They take an aspirin. And I watched a bit my diet, that's true. But I think it was mostly that I was supposed to grow thin, and I had the good fortune to really grow thin.
Author Daisy Goodwin.
She emerges from this slightly curvaceous, well, quite big silhouette into this very slender woman that we know so well. And of course, everybody wants to kind of, I don't know, point a finger at her and somehow make that kind of a bad thing to do, although we're all really pleased that she looks so great at the end. Because the thing about Callas, she wasn't actually a great beauty, but she knew how to project herself as a great beauty. She could act that. The pencil skirts, the nipped-in waist, the poodle, the handbag, the lips, she'd got it down.
Broadcaster Rob Rinder.
She willed herself to be the most beautiful version of herself she could. Coming off the plane like a head of state, with a dog and perfect handbag and ageless glamour. Who doesn't wear their swimming costume with pearl earrings? Imagine the effort it took to be Maria Callas. She grows up with a mum that tells her she's the ugly sister, the girl that's overlooked. Yet here was this woman that went on to dominate the world and become a star.
The way she looked, the way she walked into the room, that's what we called a diva. She had major star quality. There wasn't really a rival diva who could touch her for glamour.
But when you're not busy recording or appearing in opera...
I know what you're going to ask. Yeah. What do I do? There you are. Well, I must say, I have a very ridiculous and embarrassing hobby. My husband always pulls my leg for it, but it's something, you know, a mania, shall we call it. I love recipes. I know I'll never use them. But wherever I find a recipe on a newspaper, on a magazine, I just tear it out and I stick it in a book, you know, I paste it on.
Tommaso Pajani, curator of My Private Callas.
Those are Maria Callas' handwritten recipes. It seems like she just had this need of write down every dish that she loves all over the world. For example, the soufflé di cioccolato, it's composed by 20 grammi di burro, 25 grammi di cioccolato.
But the irony is, she would have had to have been mega disciplined. because of the diet?
Yeah, I think discipline, yeah.
So the big question is, could the weight loss have affected her voice in any way?
This is a very interesting and controversial area.
Well, it's a huge question that Callas fans have been deliberating for decades, since she was alive. Would weight loss have made her lose her voice? Weight loss does not make a singer lose their voice. But because there are fat cells distributed throughout the body, including even in the larynx, then what happens is when a person loses weight, their fat cells shrink.
If you lose a lot of weight, you are also losing a little bit of fatty tissue right there where the rubber meets the road. What makes me doubt that was the whole problem is that the problem precedes the weight loss.
At what point did you notice the wobble?
Right from the beginning.
Really?
Yes, right. Oh, she always had it. Sometimes she could overcome it, but on overtime she couldn't. So even in her best, she still had a lot of wobble at the top.
She noticed something back in August 1954, recording Verdi's La Forza del Destino, and she doesn't feel as though the voice is responding. She doesn't understand yet why that is. The EMI producer, Walter Legg, said if she sang like that, they'd have to hand out seasickness pills to listeners together with the record.
There is no way she didn't know that it was a problem. I think in her conscious mind, she clung to the idea that she could somehow fix this.
I'm in a terrible hurry.
She was singing Lucia in Dallas. And she cracked the E-flat, the high E-flat of the mad scene. And afterwards, she went back to the piano in her dressing room and she kept playing the note. And she kept saying, I had the note. But she couldn't execute it smoothly. So she really was feeling that she was struggling to get through an entire operatic performance. But instead of frankly, openly saying, I have some problems I need to sort out, she attributed her decline in performances to the terrible operatic productions that were being staged at the time.
Each performance we have, if we do 10 Macbeth, 10 different tenors, 10 baritones. No, I'm sorry, I can't do that. That's not art. Well, Leo, I mean, let's get it out now while we're at it.
Her vocal problems really became severe from 1958 through 1959. The pressure's really getting to her.
From then on, every time she goes on stage, she's terrified. She's terrified, not of the audience, but of her own ability to sing. And that's almost like a ticking clock going on for her.
I do think that she denied to herself how progressive it was. I think she denied to herself that it was getting worse and worse. The clearest proof that she herself knew is that she decided to quit singing, in effect. Her opera career is essentially gone.
The years roll over to 1959 on a flip-up calendar.
Aristotle Socrates Onassis. He looks like the Black Knight on the chessboard. He's erudite, charming, and small. Though he's taller than anyone else in the place when he's standing on his money.
Onassis was, of course, a famous shipping magnate. He was a very, very successful businessman.
And he has this yacht called the Christina, and he asks her to go on his yacht with his wife.
The yacht Christina, owner Aristotle Onassis, arrives at the island of Chios in the Aegean Sea. On board, a very famous passenger. With his wife and fellow passengers, Tina Onassis and opera star Maria Callas, he was to spend a few days ashore.
they want a cruise with Churchill and Churchill's daughter. And there were already rumors that Callas and Nassus were flirting, which wasn't really the case. Her husband, Meneghini, got very angry, accused her of infidelity, which she hadn't committed. But she did say, I want to manage my career myself from now on. He said, if you manage your career yourself, we're over. And he dumped her. He dumped her.
Miss Callas, have you been very dismayed at all the publicity involving Mr. Onassis?
I'm giving no interview.
The only reason you're
why did you cut short your trip? Please.
Are you going to marry?
Maria's left Meneghini, and Onassis leaves his wife, or rather, his wife leaves him. And for the next 9 years, they are a couple. They have two things in common. One is that they're Greek, so they both speak this language that nobody else in their world of sort of Eurotrash speaks. And the second thing is that they're both self-made. Here is this man who, you know, for all his faults, is clearly sexy. I mean, her whole life is about expressing the extremes of emotion, but I don't think she's ever actually felt them.
Lord Harewood.
I think to begin with, she really fell in love for the first time. And I'm sure she remained in love with Onassis, really, genuinely in love.
Speaking in 1998.
She went out into the world and became a leader, if you must use the word, of an element of cafe society. And I think she was flattered by that. She enjoyed it.
She meets the Burtons, she meets the Windsors. She becomes friends with Marlene Dietrich, and they are friends with Prince Rainier of Monaco and his wife, Grace Kelly.
Conductor Carlo Maria Giolini.
Her life was dedicated to the music like a priest. To the moment in which the door of the high society became open for her. Of course, this was the moment in which the great Maria Callas started to have difficulties.
I think there is perception that Maria is this enchanted being who's this wonderful voice, and then suddenly she meets this villain, Onassis, who sort of seduces her and takes her away from her godlike duty towards her art.
Author Daisy Goodwin.
The truth is very different, I think.
Will Crutchfield.
The idea that her personal life and her affair with Onassis triggered her vocal decline is absurd. And yet, almost every biography of Callas presents it that way. I mean, it's just not true. Whatever happened in her social life and party life and taking a lot of cruises, that was a consequence, not a cause. That was what she fled to for relief after the professional capacity had started to wither away.
She fled to it because she knew her voice.
She fled to it because she couldn't sing. She couldn't sing like Callas anymore.
It has been said Maria Callas gave up singing for Aristotle Onassis.
Well, I couldn't. I could do that without answering that, but I think it's an honest question. I thought that when I met a man I loved, that I didn't need to sing, because I think that a woman the most important thing in a woman is to have a man of her own and to make him happy. Because I don't think that singing is a woman's job.
She tells Barbara Walters she gave up music for Onassis, which is ridiculous, but she's being defensive, and she understands if she opens another can of worms, because she's asked, did you give up music? If she says, no, I had vocal problems, that's going to open a huge can of worms. But most of the time, she understood that there were technical defects in her voice that had been getting worse for a long time, and she wasn't able to remedy them.
A still image of Maria looking out of a car window. Now, an animated calendar turns over to 1964. Archive footage of Maria stepping off a plane and putting on a pair of sunglasses.
The main career ended in 1959. But then in 64 and 65, she let herself be persuaded to try one more time to return to opera.
I had been offered to produce Tosca several times in various opera houses, and I always refused for one simple reason, because I didn't think that there was a woman who could portray the character of Tosca the way I saw it, except Maria.
A policeman in crowds outside an opera house.
Just across the road here, you may be able to see a queue of rather hopeful people who are hoping that there are going to be some returns and that they'll be able to get into tonight's performance. Madame Callas had nothing to say. She shot through the stage door and hardly anyone got any pictures either.
Simon Sharma.
Yeah, God, I was there. One of the most unforgettable moments in my life, really. I was 19 years old. This was the first opera I'd ever seen. And, you know, she was the most famous opera singer, possibly the only one I'd ever heard of.
A sign reads, Tosca, all seats sold.
This woman was frightened. She was in agony. She tried to cancel that she was in the wings, crossing herself in the orthodox way all the time, and holding my hand to a point. I was so excited myself that I didn't feel the pain. But when she went on stage, Mario, Mario, Mario. Mario, please. The whole event started. I looked at my hand, and I had four wounds. They kept bleeding all evening, and I had the scars for which I religiously looked at as stigmatas.
This is Tosca, and he's the hideous chief of secret police. The price of him saving her boyfriend is that he sleeps with her.
A scene from Tosca by Puccini shows Maria drinking from a glass, then clutching her stomach.
Her jaw tightens. I don't remember that, but I can see it now. All of her gestures are gradually this kind of ferocious emotion building and building and building. This was kind of bottled power. He stalks over like this. I mean, there's a kind of smirk of satisfaction on his face. She plunges the knife.
She chases him across the stage, wielding her knife.
This threatening, beautiful, poignant voice. You know, you were a kind of eavesdropper on this very kind of physical, sweaty, scary, demonic moment. She leans over him. This beautiful, dark voice completely stops singing. And she actually just simply speaks. Mori! 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 Die, you fucker, basically. Die. And, you know, she was apparently on the downward slope, or she wasn't. I had no idea about that. For me, this voice was absolutely majestic.
She drops the knife and steps back from the slain body.
For an hour and 10 minutes, the public has nothing to do but look at you. If you don't really fascinate them with your voice, and no matter how much you fascinate them with your voice and your role, they still have all the time to cut you to pieces.
At the end of Act Two of Tosca, and it's one of the very rare bits of footage there still is of Callas performing in opera.
Avanti a lui, tremava tutto.
Tutta roba.
And what's so incredible about it is she's not singing, but you are completely rapt. That proves what an incredible actor she was.
There's film of that Tosca, and it's quite...
Very compelling. She's a fantastic actress, yeah. The voice is a wreck.
Maria climbs out of a car.
Look, these things like that Tosca in 1964, in effect, that was post-career. She was in this tension between, should I keep trying, should I retire, and just say, it has been. And she really lived on that nervous edge from 1959 to 1965.
In the 1965 televised performance of the aria, she sings in La Sonnambula. You're hearing a frail voice in a woman who at that time is 41. But if you didn't know how old she was, you'd think maybe she was 54, 55-ish. Because it's a very, very fragile voice, and usually singers of her age then are not having problems on that scale.
And you see that in that performance?
Yes.
Interesting. Still, it's lovely.
It's quite beautiful, but compared to the live recordings of La Sonnambula from 1955 and 1957, it's not that great.
For me, it is a difficult thing to watch and sad, because it's so clear that she is avoiding disaster by picking her way through it in the tiniest little voice.
I was not comfortable. I felt that no matter how much, for instance, a critic could have said beautiful things about me, I knew very well I was doing something that was not right. Had created some bad habits. As a matter of fact, I think that on the whole, I have improved. I had acquired a sort of a, as they called it, a wobble on the high notes, which is a pulsation.
A black and white still image of Maria on a street wearing a fur coat, her gaze down, her mouth agape. Now, a calendar flips over to 1968. A newsreel title, Jackie Weds Ari.
From the tiny chapel on the Greek island of Skopios, the first public appearance of Mrs. Aristotle Onassis. Formerly, of course, Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy, widow of the late president.
A beaming Jackie climbs into a car after her wedding. Daisy Goodwin, author of Diva.
You know, Maria was heartbroken by the betrayal. The humiliation of being publicly left while he marries a woman who no one can speak ill of because she sat there while her husband's brain spattered all over her pink suit. Onassis, of course, tries to come back because he realizes he's made the most terrible mistake, but he'd broken the spell. And I think that she realized that she could manage without him.
Callas Comeback Concert, 1973. Maria walks onto stage.
Certainly the London concerts, like all the others, were a sellout. Certainly the fans cheered. Certainly the atmosphere was electric.
I must say this evening I was a little more emotion than usual, because when the public loves me that much, I have to give that much more. And there's no end to it.
But to most charitable ears, the actual sound was a mere disappointment at best, at worst a travesty of former greatness and a deep personal tragedy.
When she was giving that concert tour from 73 to 74, you know, trying to grab every single last hope, I think it's very, very understandable for anybody facing a loss, especially if it's so incomprehensible. She didn't understand what had happened.
How did you react to what the more knowledgeable critics said about you the morning after the concert? I mean, who were delighted to see you back.
Yes.
But had certain criticisms.
I don't read the criticisms because, you see, I know exactly what I do before anybody tells me. So I don't want to read them and this way disturb my peace of mind and my nerves. So I feel that if I don't read criticisms, it's better. I know exactly what I do.
Onassis died in 1975, and Callas died 2 years later in 1977. You know, everybody says, oh, well, she couldn't go on living when Onassis was dead. But I think it was really that she couldn't go on living when she couldn't sing.
So really, the real tragedy, and if there is a tragedy of Callas, it's nothing to do with her so-called operatic love life. It's about the voice.
The only tragedy in Callas' life is the degeneration of the voice.
There are lots of explanations why her voice went prematurely. You know, her husband worked her too hard. Is that plausible?
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true because she did not sing an atypically heavy schedule. She sang, if anything, a more relaxed than normal schedule of performances. The problem clearly goes further back.
So where should we go back to?
You have to go back to what can never be verified, the years when she was learning to sing in Athens.
The calendar flicks over to 1937. Will Crutchfield, conductor, musicologist and vocal coach.
Singing is something like tennis or ballet or violin. It's an activity that is best learned early in life. You build in a set of muscle memories that then become automatic, and then they are not really subject to voluntary change. One of the things you lay in that early period of training is your vibrato. The very striking thing about Callas is that she began her career from the very earliest we can hear in 1949 with a vibrato rate slower than had ever been known in a professional singer from the beginning of the 20th century. Far slower, dramatically slower.
In a music studio.
Maybe the best way is to just show it and hear it. What we're going to hear is a soprano singing in a fairly typical vibrato, and then Callas in 1949.
Typical vibrato, vibrato rate 7.5 per second.
This is Callas. You hear, it's drastically slower.
Callas vibrato, vibrato rate 4.7 per second.
This is with everything filtered out.
Typical vibrato. Callas vibrato.
So when it's all cleared out like that, you can really hear the difference of speed.
And is that what we mean by the wobble?
That is a wobble already when she was 26 and when she was still heavy. That's why I insist that the myth has got it wrong. Callas didn't get her vocal decline from some external factor like overdieting or neglecting her practice because she was having an affair with Onassis or any of those things. It was baked in when she started her career. It's not even necessarily terrible sounding to have a vibrato as slow as Callas had. It's just you don't want it at that age because it's going to get slower. The long and short of it is that Callas entered the scene in her 20s with a vibrato that would have been typical of a 65-year-old soprano about to retire or past retirement.
Maria leaving a plane.
We lost not years but decades that we should have had of her in peak form.
Why did she do that? Why did she cultivate her voice like that?
I think that it gave her certain advantages that meant a lot to her. One of the things that everyone observes about Callas is this quality of stillness and intimacy. I think cultivating this little private voice gave her a range of colors that she knew she could use to magical effect. And I think she loved that. And this was probably well served by the slow vibrato. You know, in classical tragedy, there is the idea of a tragic flaw that brings down the hero. And the fatal flaw was built into her voice for the purpose of making music the way she wanted to make it.
Maria is standing with her arms wrapped around herself.
The tragedy of Callas is she lost her voice, her means of communicating to the world. And what she had to communicate was the most moving and important statement we had ever heard from an operatic singer. She had that and she lost it. That is the tragedy.
Casta Diva, Norma Bellini.
Callas, not by saying that the flaws don't matter. The flaws do matter, but her genius was such that flaws and all, one would rather hear the music from her than from anyone. She's just that good.
You see, voice is the best way of serving music. The voice is the greatest means of expressing beautiful feelings. It's like a drama, theater, you know, the best way of giving life to something.
Teaching her poodle to sing.
You're excited, Silver. You could do better than that, Norman.
Hello.